welcome to this week's episode of the Thick Cast. This is episode number 252. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and I'm going to keep this short because I'm on vacation. Coming up is an interview with John Berardi, and I will preface by saying that we did have some like clicking with John's audio. I try to clean it up a little bit. It's not too bad. I think you guys are still going to be able to hear him perfectly clear, but I just want to give you a heads up. It's not your iPod or anything like that. It is on my end. So still hope you enjoy it. I will be back soon with some more episodes, some more interviews and stuff, interviews that we have lined up. So stick around. Don't forget to check out thefitcast.com. I've been writing a lot up on there, so you can be checking out some blog posts, some cool stuff that I'm doing with a transformation project, and also talking about some more basic stuff, getting more in depth on some specific exercises, like exercise of the week type stuff. And then also a big thing that I'm going to be writing about is working on willpower and building willpower and the effect that it can have on your training and your results and stuff like that. So again, keep a lookout at thefitcast.com. Please don't forget to subscribe through iTunes. Check us out there. And again, thanks as always, guys, as we kind of bridge this going into our seventh year. Thanks for listening as always, and I hope you enjoy the interview.
With me right now is John Berardi. As I mentioned before, as we just kind of passed episode 250, I'm doing a little special group of episodes where I go back and have my favorite guests back on the show. And John's obviously at the top of that list. And I still remember, driving home to my parents' house because the internet was so bad at college to record episode 5 with John back in over 6 years ago, I guess now.
Wow. 250. You're at episode 250. That's awesome. I was actually thinking about this the other day when I was thinking about preparing for the interview and our conversation today. And I was like, what episode was it that I first came on? So it was 5. That was the first one I appeared on.
Yeah, it was way back.
6 years. It's funny, isn't it? Like, it doesn't sound like that much, really. Maybe not to me because I'm older, but yeah, I mean, in internet years, that's like 600 years, isn't it?
That's forever. It's that's before Facebook,
BF.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Awesome.
But yeah, man, it's great to get you back on. And, you know, like you said, so much has changed in the last 6 years, especially with what you guys have going over. I mean, just talking about precisionnutrition.com and you know, the amazing things that you guys are doing over there in terms of like nutrition coaching and things like that. It's got to have been a crazy ride for you as well.
Yeah, it really has been. You know, that was the other part of it. I was thinking about, well, what could I possibly have been talking about 6 years ago? You know what I mean? Like, what would I have been saying and what would we have been talking about interview-wise? Again, because things are totally, totally different. And actually, to try and put myself back in that headspace that I was at then, it'd be very difficult because of, you know, all the different things I've learned since then. I mean, back then, 6 years ago, it would have been 2006. So that would have been before we even released our first product at precisionnutrition.com, which, you know, was an information product. It was, you know, a diet guide, a nutrition guide. It's before we released our cookbooks. It's before we started coaching, before our certification. So it's kind of crazy just to think about it. But yeah, things have been great these last few years. I mean, we, PN as a group has really grown to be something much, much larger than, you know, than Dr. John Berardi. I originally, you know, that's why people wanted to talk to me, because I was doing coaching with elite athletes and helping people get in better shape myself. And it was kind of like a one-man band. But now we have over 50 full-time, super talented people working for the organization. Whereas I could have maybe helped 20, 30 people at a time back then, we're coaching close to 5,000-6,000 people at any one time right now. And in addition to, that's just sort of our either our muscle building or our weight loss coaching programs. But in addition to the certification, where we've had, I think by last count was like 6,000 or 6,500 fitness professionals go through the PN certification program. So I just feel really, really honored to be able to reach out and, you know, get involved in so many people's lives, whether it's to help them, you know, lose weight, look better, feel better, or whether it's to help professionals become, you know, whatever you want to call it, more elite, better educated, better prepared to meet the needs of their clients. So it's been really cool.
Yeah, it's been great to even see the, you know, the fruition of a lot of that stuff. And like I mentioned before, it's been a really cool ride. And I think the last thing, or one of the big things that we did talk about back in the day was, you know, your work with the Canadian Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
It was the bobsledding team, correct?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I probably started around 2002 or something, three with the cross-country skiers, and then work with bobsled and downhill or alpine, you know, skeleton and those crazy racers. And yeah, and then it just kind of grew from there. So yeah, that's probably what we were talking about back in the day.
Well, now we got a whole new batch of questions for you.
And it's, yeah, I bet.
And when, you know, I announced that you're coming on the show, we usually get like three times as many questions as I get for every other guest, which, you know, makes it very easy on my end. And it gives us a great kind of sea of questions to pick the best from. And one of the things that a lot of people hit on, but I'll grab Will's version of this question. He says it's been over a year since you released your Experiments with Intermittent Fasting ebook. And he said that you mentioned that you've been incorporating IF with large sample sizes of your coaching clients as the next step. He was just kind of wondering, you know, what kind of results or updates or thoughts do you have on the whole, you know, IF movement, I guess?
Mm-hmm. How did I know that was going to be the first one? Yeah, no, I mean, intermittent fasting as a practice, and really it's kind of hard to define because there's so many ways to do it, has just been so interesting in terms of how people are talking about it and the debates. And it just, you know, it was like the perfect storm, right? I mean, it is basically, in some senses, at least in terms of meal timing and frequency, the opposite of what everyone's been taught to believe. And as a function of that, it's so damn controversial. With that said, though, you know, you see people lining up. They either want to be on the side against intermittent fasting or for it. And, you know, as you know, over the years, I try and take a more judicious approach where I just want to try stuff and see what happens. So for those who, you know, don't know about my early experiments, I published a free book online, Precision Nutrition did, called it. Thousand people have already checked it out. And I was like, there's nothing I've ever done that has ever gotten that much attention or that many views. So for people who want to check it out, it's totally free online. You can just go check out Experiments with Intermittent Fasting. Google it. You don't even have to download like a PDF or anything. It's like a book format that's hosted completely online. So you can actually flip the pages by just clicking the next page, almost like a Kindle or something like that. So anyway, my whole thing was intermittent fasting was getting a lot of lip service on the web. And to be quite honest, there was a lot of like boisterous, highly opinionated a-holes talking about it. And it just got to the point where it was very interesting what they were saying, but the way they were saying it was just unprofessional and couldn't really resonate with anyone beyond this like really niche group. So for me, I had a few unique goals I wanted to achieve. So I decided to give a couple of different six, in fact, intermittent fasting protocols a test drive. And I, you know, in typical fashion, I measured everything, you know, from mood to blood work to different physiological markers to strength to obviously body composition. And, you know, some intermittent fasting protocols worked fantastically, and they were aligned with my goals. Others were a disaster for me. So I just kind of chronicled everything there and published it there. So people who are interested can check it out. So I guess Will's question was just what's happened since then. So, you know, originally it was just, you know, I chronicled my own experience. Since then, we've done a lot of testing with different populations. Because we have the good fortune of having thousands and thousands of people who want to work with us to lose weight, lose fat, get healthy, we have like the world's largest nutrition sample size. So, you know, I've worked with individuals, we've worked with our coaching programs to test intermittent fasting, and just a few interesting things have emerged. I mean, this would probably take another book to get through it all, but the first thing is that we found that there's definitely a gender difference in intermittent fasting. So it seems like about, you know, 75 to 80% of the guys that I've worked with or that we've worked with using intermittent fasting have had a lot of success in terms of managing hunger, in terms of losing almost exclusively body fat, in terms of finding a sustainable way of eating that they could presumably do indefinitely, although most of them don't, right? Going long stretches of time without eating is certainly not for everyone. Not everyone really likes it. But the idea of sustainability for me is if it did fit your lifestyle for some time, then you could do it without huge amounts of lethargy, without huge cravings and binging and stuff like that. So for guys, seems to be great about three quarters of the time. It seems to be the opposite for women. And I know there's lots of women out there who've had success with it. And, you know, they're going to burn an effigy of me tonight because I've said that doesn't tend to work as well in women. But just, you know, again, in working with lots of people here, we found that only about, you know, a quarter of women have a lot of success with it. And again, I'm not just talking about weight loss, because weight loss can be fleeting and transient if it isn't something you can stick with. So I'm talking about sort of hormonal changes. I'm talking about cravings. I'm talking about that sort of that thing that happens when you are following a restrictive intake, or let's just call it self-regulating your diet, and you start to feel a little crazy. You know, you feel like you're craving weird foods, your moods are altered. So again, it's not all women, but more women tend to struggle with intermittent fasting than men, and we've seen that very consistently and reliably, and it probably has a lot to do with reproductive hormones and that delicate energy sensing mechanism that women have. Which is, you know, again, evolutionarily well adapted. So that's the first thing we found. You know, beyond that, there seems to be a gap in terms of age, if you want to call it demographic. We tend to find a lot more young people like doing intermittent fasting. When I say young, I mean in their 20s, than people who are a bit older. And it may not be age, but it may be your family situation. Generally, people with families, generally people with client-facing jobs or lots of other lifestyle stressors tend to not do as well on intermittent fasting. It tends to make them a little crazier. It tends to shift the loss of fat to lean in a negative direction. So what you'll end up finding is a lot of people on the internet who are big, big vocal fasting proponents. The weight of those people tend to be young, single dudes. And so it stands to reason, right? You don't have loads of other lifestyle stressors. You're a guy already, right? So you have sort of a more robust hormonal adaptive system. And then you don't have a family and that you're worrying about in terms of trying to make this weird lifestyle fit. So a lot of it, you know, there's some physiology here, but a lot of it is psychology, because the truth of the matter is, you know, someone can get in fantastic shape doing intermittent fasting, whether they fast one day a week or 2 days a week, or whether they fast 16 hours at a time or 20 hours at a time, or whether they just eat five moderate meals a day. You can get in wicked shape if you do the right things. You know, solid exercise plan, you know, varied and good nutritional choices. So I don't think there's a big difference there. A lot of it just comes down to kind of lifestyle stuff. But like I say, there is a little physiology. So that's kind of what's up and what's new. And we continue to investigate it. You know, we'll continue to report on some of the interesting things that come out of it.
Oh, that's a great observation. It's something that I never looked at, is breaking down the demographic of, like you said, the people that are being the most vocal about it on the internet. And you're totally right. Whenever I see someone posting about it, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and it's always, you know, a guy in his, you know, 20s, you know, not so much with women, and mostly people with families. Because again, it's like, how do you kind of like fit that into that lifestyle? It's got to be super difficult.
Yeah, and you know, if it's not difficult, you know, there's this thing you do when you have kids and a partner. You respect them. You respect their schedule, and you respect how your choices affect them. And so to be like, yeah, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm just going to do my thing. You make your own goddamn meals. It's just, you know, I mean, you can do it, but I wouldn't recommend it. So it just makes it a little bit more challenging. So you're like, if I can get in shape using a host of different methodologies and nutritional methodologies, training methodologies, why wouldn't I choose the one that's most friendly to the people that I care about most in my life? So, you know, again, to be honest, I would have never said some shit like this when I was in my 20s because it didn't matter. I didn't have that, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't even have to think about this stuff. And you know, and beyond that, I guess the issue becomes what you were hinting at there is that, and I used to do this too when I was young. When you're younger and you find success in something, a nutrition plan or whatever it might be, school or work, you tend to do this thing where it's always everyone forever, right? So, oh, intermittent fasting worked for me, so it must always work for everyone and forever. You know what I mean? And to be honest, and I don't want to be patronizing towards anyone young because I was there and I totally get it. And but that's just a lack of experience, right? I mean, I've been doing this for a super long time now. You know, looking back at like when we did the first FitCast, or when the other day I was looking back, my first published article online was like 2000, right? So I've been being published for 13 years. Which to some people it's not very long, but to others it's like, whoa, that's a long time. And in that time, you just see everything. You know, I mean, we're working with 6,000 clients a year. We see everything. So the idea that there's something out there that's for everyone always and it'll always work forever, it's just folly. I mean, there's a lot of options, and you have to stay open to them. So, I mean, that's my little soapbox rant there, but I just think it's a very important way of looking at life, you know, or at least shifting your views, because it's very, very compelling when you're young, when you find something that's great, to be excited about it and then just think it's the thing, you know, for everyone and for always. And it's just, there's not too much like that out there.
Well, kind of going off of, you know, things that have been, you know, as we're being retrospective a little bit, Sol had a question about kind of what was the most interesting thing that you learned in the past year, and also, you know, I think this is another good take on it. You know, what was the biggest kind of waste of time when you kind of look at what you've been researching or been interested in?
Mm-hmm. Cool. It's a good question. 2012, and I don't know. Learning is one thing. I feel like for me, the things that really resonate with me that I would think are worth talking about in terms of learning are often things that I kind of relearn in the sense that I figure out really how it applies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, in our field, there's loads of stuff that I've read, I've heard. You know, but I haven't learned it until I figured it out. There's two great examples for me. This, I'll just talk about this personally for me. 2012, on the exercise front, I really learned how to do a very minimum of exercise and still be in great shape. Now, we've all heard this. Like, almost every person listening in has heard this. Like, oh, it's so popular. Anyone who's read The 4-Hour Body knows Tim Ferriss has been talking about it for like 2 years. But people have been talking about this for a very long time and doing it for even longer. And the idea is that you can do a minimum of exercise and still stay in great shape. And that is very, very easy to understand, but very difficult to learn. Because if you're a fitness fanatic or you work out a lot or whatever the case may be, it's really hard to say, oh, you know what, for the next little while, I'm just going to work out 2 hours a week. It just feels like too little, and you'll never try it. Even though you've heard and you think it might work. So for me, this was just a very, very action-packed year. We had our second child, working on our third. PN has grown. Just lots of cool and challenging personal things. So I had to, at many times, figure out ways to get great training in at a very, very minimum amount of time per week. So like 4 15-minute workouts or something like that, sometimes without even weights. So just body weight stuff. So I really learned in 2012 that that's feasible, that it can work. And I mean, I don't want to be like braggartly or whatever, but I mean, I was able to, during those times, maintain a body fat of like 6 to 7%. So this isn't just me, it's like, you know, people listening in and going, oh, I don't know much about Dr. John Berardi, he's saying this, but maybe he's just a fat guy. No, I mean, I've been able to maintain a very lean body, you know, obviously considering nutrition as well, but by doing this kind of minimal type of working out at times. And again, here comes the danger, you know, always, for everyone, forever. That's not what I'm saying here, right? I'm not saying, oh, from now on, for the rest of your life, do minimal exercise. I'm just saying for at times of the year, it's very feasible. And what that does, I mean, not only is that, again, a physical thing, it's a mental thing as well for me, because in the past, I've fallen victim to the same thing every other human does, which is you start to get really busy. And the way you've always worked out or done anything in the past is, well, I do this much of it. That's how much I do. And then you get busy and you can't do that much. And then you just don't do any, right? And I wrote about this recently on the PN site. I got together with an old high school buddy. He's like, man, I wish we could work out. I wish I could just work out like we used to. And we worked out together in high school and just after high school. And I was like, buddy. And so he hasn't worked out for a long time because he can't find the time, the energy, or the desire to work out like we used to. And I was like, man, you don't even want to work out like we used to. First of all, it was stupid. We were teenagers. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. We had nothing but free time. And we worked out like an hour and a half, 2 hours every single day of the week. I'm like, you don't want to do that anymore. But see, that was the thing. That's the only time he's ever been in shape in his life. He figured that's the only way to do it. And since he can't do that, he's going to do nothing. And learning that lesson, I think, is huge for anyone. Anyone who's now fit and is going to get busy in the future with family, job, life. Anyone who isn't fit but wants to start getting fit. Really realizing that there are ways to do this very minimally is super important, super important. And if you're listening and you've never had to do it, God bless, there's a time in your life where you will. God forbid, but someone in your family may get ill and you have to take care of them. So you'll be a caregiver. You may be going to the hospital several times a day. You may have huge deadlines at work and you're working 80 hours a week. But something will happen. And during that time, caring for yourself is going to be critical. But you're not going to be able to do it the way you're doing it now. Finding small ways to do it effectively, it's awesome. It's awesome to learn, and that was one of my big learnings for 2012. I've got two, though. The other one was a piece of nutritional heresy. Nowadays people in fitness always talk about eating clean, and there's sub niches who talk about it more than others. Certain people who just feel like if you ever eat from a fast food joint, or if you ever eat a sugary dessert, or even in some cases eat a piece of bread, you've committed a nutritional crime. And I would say that I've gone back and forth over the years in terms of how much I believe in sort of nonstop 24/7 clean eating. It's like, here's one example: pizza. I really like eating pizza, and so the people who are on the one end of the spectrum, the really clean eaters, will be like, no, I'll never eat a pizza. I'll make my own at home, right? So I'll use certain type of wheat-free crust and, you know, dairy-free cheese. And so you get some kind of abomination that's not even close to what pizza really is. but they feel good for eating clean. So in 2012, for me, it was actually a year where I wanted to test my boundaries and figure out how often and how much I could not eat clean and still stay in shape and my blood work be in check and all that kind of a thing, because I monitor this stuff all the time. So I already feel people feeling the discomfort with it. You know, there's the real clean eaters who are like, no, you don't understand, Dr. Berardi. Well, I think I do understand, but I just wanted to test it. And I found that there's, you know, it's pretty amazing that if you generally, you know, train smart and hard, and titrate your training to your nutrition. So they have to be in balance. Your training should reflect your nutrition and vice versa. You can actually get away with a lot more transgressions, if you will. Nutritional transgressions, eating higher sugar foods or higher carb foods or more processed foods and stuff like that than you actually think. But there's the one thing that I found to it is there's a catch. You can do that more often if you cycle your calories and carbs. And now it starts to sound like some complicated science that strips all the fun out of eating. But really what I mean by that is a couple days a week, you just eat meat and vegetables. And then those other couple of days, obviously you eat your meat and vegetables, and then you can add your treats or your desserts or whatever you want to add to it. So that was a huge thing for me, because this year I've probably tried more what people would call crap food than I ever have in my entire life. But not just crap food. There's been times where on my Facebook, I've posted a question. And I have about 9,000 people following my Facebook page. So there's lots of opinions. So I posted a question, like what's your favorite food, like non-clean food or meal? And I would just go try the things that people would suggest that I try, because, you know, a lot of my life I've been a clean eater, so I haven't tried a lot of these kind of crazy foods that are either considered unhealthy or just wouldn't fit in with a very health conscious person's plan. And so this year I've eaten all kinds of interesting ethnic foods, and you know, I have eaten at a couple fast food restaurants and stuff like that. And I found that if I can have a few days a week where I keep my carbs and calories low, then on those other days I can try these types of foods and have next to no negative physical implication there. So I can stay super lean. My blood work still stays in check. So it was, again, just some people may be like, that's the best thing you learned in 2012. Shit, man. But I mean, I learned lots about science and physiology and psychology as well. And we could talk about that anytime. But these were deeply personal learnings, because they go beyond some information I collected. Mm-hmm. And it went into something that I did that altered the way that I look at the world, at food, at exercise, and how it fits into my real human life. Like when I wake up in the morning and I have to get my daughter off to school, how does what I'm doing, nutrition and exercise, fit into my real human life? And those are two things that I found were very interesting.
That's super cool. And I think that's when, you know, people look at it in a certain way. It's a lot like just real life application.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what's just become so important to me over the years. You know, what can you actually do in your day, mm-hmm. Within the context of everything else you have to do in your day to be healthy, lean, fit, and enjoy your life? That's what I'm most interested in learning, if you will. Now, you do have to learn the science and the psychology, because that's what fits it all together, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're a coach. But as just a human being, you know, I take off my Dr. John Berardi hat, and I think some people think I just must wear that all the time, right? Then I just have to look at me, you know, and that's something that I wanted to pass along to everyone listening in. You know, when you're looking at you and you drop away all the, I'm going to be an educated personal trainer, I'm going to be a fitness fanatic who believes in clean eating and whatever. And when you're just being a human people, a person with the people that you care about who aren't maybe into the same thing all the time, how's that going to work? Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do? And so those are some cool things I took. Biggest waste of time. I don't know. That's an interesting one. I tend not to think about things like that because I always go back to one thing that Alan Cosgrove has written about before, which was books. And, you know, people are like, hey, is that a good book to read? And, you know, Alan's always like, well, I've never gotten any dumber by reading a book, you know? So I kind of feel the same way. I tend not to dwell on my wastes of time because then it would waste more of my time, right? I'd rather go try something new.
Very cool. The next question that we have from Kent, kind of talking about a lot of the issues that are, you know, in the media right now. We're talking about, you know, the way we are eating as people in America. But he asks, will a good doctor be willing to talk about the effects of the typical North American diet, acidosis and inflammation? And then if there are any further exciting evidence about how green supplements or just plain vegetable intake can impact that?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I haven't, you know, we've published a couple studies on this over the years. And just to set the stage, you know, the idea being that a lot of people think that a diet high in either protein or grains in particular tends to cause this sort of acidosis, if you will. So what ends up happening is that your body trying to neutralize the acid status of the food will actually sort of release things like calcium from your bones and glutamine from your muscles to neutralize it. So in the end, your blood pH or acid-base status never changes. It's just your cells are trying to accommodate an influx of acidic food or acid-producing foods. And so they give up their essential things like calcium, which makes your bones strong, and glutamine, which is essential in muscles. So that's the theory. And, you know, over the years, people have looked at different things that could help neutralize that dietary acidity. And I mean, the biggest thing is a higher fruit and vegetable intake. Protein itself tends to provide some of its own buffering capacity. So that's probably okay there. If you eat a lot of, you know, grains or carbohydrates, you know, whatever, I mean, whether it fits into your goals or not, we can't say here, but that tends to be acid producing. But if you can balance that out with fruits, vegetables, then you know, just from a dietary perspective, you can take care of most of it. You know, one interesting thing was, you know, what about the people who don't or won't eat fruits and vegetables? What do you do either while they're trying to transition their habits or, you know, if they decided they just never will? So we looked at a couple of studies looking at green supplements. So things like Greens Plus, which is the product that we tested, on pH. And so we just kind of measured how did the body use these very basic or alkaline compounds, and how did that have a physiological effect? So, you know, our first and early studies looked at Greens Plus, and we found a positive effect. So it shifted the body's pH, and we used urinary pH as a marker of whole body, and we found that it sort of made people a little bit less acidic, if you want to call it that. Since then, I've actually tested a whole bunch of different things. I went on this crazy rampage for like, I don't know, I think it must have been 6 months. I have my logbook here, where I measured my morning urine's pH every single day. And I wanted to, first of all, get a really good baseline to see what the variability was between days. I looked at like carb cycling. I looked at, you know, how my urinary pH was impacted by my workouts. So basically, you know, what was the variability? Did a workout the day before impact my pH the next morning? Did high carbs the day before or low carbs the day before? And so, you know, I was looking for those types of trends, but then what I wanted to do was some intervention, right? So if I could smooth out the day-to-day variability or figure out what type of, you know, dietary intake or workout the day before, how that had an impact on my pH, then I could do some stats later to figure out how the intervention could impact pH or not. So I looked at a bunch of stuff. In particular, I looked at greens again on myself. I looked at potassium bicarbonate, which is sort of the industry or research world gold standard. So anytime they want to manipulate pH, they'll use potassium bicarbonate in the studies generally, because it's just a very, very basic or alkaline compound. And then I actually looked at these sort of, if you want to call them, pH balance waters, so alkaline waters, and you guys have heard about this. Generally, it's just, you hear about it from a bunch of crazy multi-level marketing people trying to sell you this special alkaline water. But the question is, are they crazy or not? Just because they're weird, are they wrong? So what I did was I actually looked at a whole bunch of different things. And the ones that emerged were, in particular, potassium bicarbonate. We already know works fantastically, and it did. I mean, it shifted my urinary pH very consistently and reliably after 5 days, and it kept it there. And then it actually kept it shifted for a while after I stopped taking it. Now, the only problem with potassium bicarbonate is that it is awful to drink. You basically mix it up in water, or I was actually mixing it up with my workout drink, and it just has this weird texture and flavor that you do not like. So, I mean, I was choking it down, but it's not something I'd want to do for long periods of time. The alkaline water actually had a very similar effect as the potassium bicarbonate, without the nastiness. You know, I mean, you basically don't taste anything different. What I did was, there was a local guy who has one of those alkaline water machines that you can just attach to your kitchen faucet, and I just ran my water through there. So, as some people say, it tastes better. I don't know. I don't notice the difference in terms of taste, but it's just not really noticeable. But you have a profound sort of shift in pH. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of ways of doing this. If you eat either high protein or high grains diet or both, you can either eat more fruits and vegetables to balance them out. You can take a green supplement. You can use potassium bicarbonate, or you can use alkaline water. It's the same thing as we talked about earlier. There's lots of ways to do things physiologically or schedule-wise or psychologically. It's just what's going to work for you, and what may work for you now may not work for everyone, and what may work for you now may not work for you later. But there's just some interesting things that I found in experimenting with this stuff. And if any people who are listening in think I'm nuts for doing this kind of thing, you haven't even heard the half of it. I always got some kind of crazy experiment going on. My daughter walks in, she's 3 now, and she'll just be like, "Hey, Daddy, what's that?" And it's usually some kind of new crazy piece of equipment I'm testing, or something weird that I'm doing that she's never seen before. And then I have the challenge of explaining science and my particular experiments to her each time. So it's good fun around our place.
Yeah, get them started early, right?
Exactly.
Well, kind of on that same note, the other, you know, big debate that's been going on is, you know, organic versus non-organic. Are there really lots of benefits to going with a, you know, mostly organic intake of your fruits and vegetables? How have you guys addressed that on precision nutrition, and, you know, what have you guys found?
Well, what we do with, you know, I can start with what we do with our clients.
Yeah.
And what we do with our clients is we kind of just meet them where they are right now, right? Mm-hmm. So if someone is not eating fruits and vegetables, or just eating way too few, or eating just out of a can, or those types of things, they'd be on like one end of the spectrum. And then people who are, you know, going to the organic fields themselves, picking the fruit from the vine, right? And then washing it in special pH-treated water would be the other end of the spectrum, right? So if I answer this question and you're on a different end of the spectrum, then you either think I'm wrong, or you think I'm asking too much of you. So what we do in PN is we figure out where people are right now, and then we sort of try and inch them up the continuum to wherever they can afford the best solution for them, or wherever they feel most comfortable. Mm-hmm. Now, in general, I mean, there's a lot of issues here. The first is nutritional value, right? So are organic more nutritious than non-organic? And that question is very equivocal. We're not sure. We don't think so. What tends to be the most nutritious is local. So locally grown fruits and vegetables that gets to your body within the shortest period of time after they've been picked. Mm-hmm. That's the most nutritious. okay? Because if an organic piece of fruit has to travel across the country or across several countries to get to you, it's diminishing in its nutritional value over time. So the best possible in terms of nutritional value is local. The real benefit of organic is that for foods that are typically high in pesticides or high, you know, treated with pesticides, organic, you don't get that generally. And this is where it gets all gray, right? Because go for a drive through Northern California sometime and you'll see an organic farm on the right-hand side of the road and a non-organic on the left-hand side of the road. So you can't tell me that those pesticides don't blow across the road, right? Mm-hmm. You probably get less, but nevertheless. My wife's dad is a farmer. So, you know, I get to talk to a farmer routinely about these kind of issues. And it's not as clear as cut and dry as people think. But nevertheless, in terms of preventing pesticide exposure or a high amount of pesticide exposure, I feel like organic may be a better choice. But here's the thing. Not all fruits and vegetables are highly contaminated. So there's a whole list about this. The Environmental Working Group, most of you have probably heard of this, have published what they call sort of the consistently clean and the dirty dozen list. Mm-hmm. And so the dirty dozen are the fruits and vegetables typically high in pesticides, and the consistently clean are the ones who aren't. So if, you know, if you want to do all of this mathematics, you can figure out the fruits and vegetables that are highly contaminated typically and do those organic, and then you do the other ones, you know, regularly grown. But again, the best option from a nutritional value is simply local, locally grown stuff. And now you have all kinds of other issues, right? I mean, you've got sustainability issues. Some people feel like organic farming may be more sustainable, but on the other hand, you have people who think, you know, regularly grown fruits and vegetables, non-organic grown fruits and vegetables may feed more people. So I don't want to weigh in on all of that because I'm certainly not an expert on, you know, feeding the world or sustainability. But nevertheless, from a nutrient standpoint, you know, and from a pesticide standpoint, I think I weighed in on that. So it's just not as cut and dry. I mean, if you have the means and you want to buy all organic, God bless. Maybe go look for local organic because that's where you're going to get, you know, both guaranteed clean and high nutrient value stuff. But not everyone has to reach out to that level, right? I mean, if you can't afford it, if you're on a tighter budget, eating fruits and vegetables, awesome. Wash them. Hmm. Well, you know, wash them well and you should be good.
Very cool. And one, as we kind of come towards the end of the interview, this is, I mean, I feel like we probably hit on this 6 years ago because it was still a debate back then, but Ryan wants to know a little bit about pre and post-workout nutrition in light of equivocal evidence in the body of research as a whole, acute and chronic, of the effectiveness of timing protein intake pre and post-workout on muscle strength and hypertrophy. Where do you stand?
Okay, so I guess what I'm sensing into here is the question of like, so what do I do post-workout, pre or post-workout, if I want to build muscle and strength? Do I need a workout drink or not? And the answer is, it depends on what you're doing the rest of the day. And that really is my answer for everything else. Does intermittent fasting work? It depends on what you're eating when you decide to eat, how long you're fasting, and what you're doing during the fasting and the eating periods. Does post-workout, pre-workout, during-workout nutrition work? It does, for a couple of reasons. One is that it usually helps people get more calories in during the day. And that's an advantage if you're trying to build muscle and strength. Every opportunity to get more calories, if in particular if you're someone who has a difficult time getting in enough calories, is a great opportunity. So drinking pre, during, and post-workout is a real advantage. And the people in our Scrawny to Brawny program who are, you know, classic ectomorphs really benefit from a during workout nutrition situation because they're flooding the blood with amino acids during a time where they're prime to use that for recovery and growth, and they're getting more calories. However, lots of people have done extremely well without these types of drinks. If you have high enough protein meals in and around your workout, you may not need the drinks. You might not need a liquid nutrition product. And, you know, again, this is coming from a guy who developed the original formula for BioTest Surge back in 2001. My PhD dissertation work was around recovery from exercise, endurance and strength exercise. We developed a formula that had certain amino acids and proteins and carbohydrates. And then we, you know, sold the formula to BioTest. So that was a product, you know, I worked on very, very early in my career. And I still believe in that, of course. But it's just, who are you and what are you doing? If you're an elite athlete, we always use workout nutrition. It may be just branched chain amino acids if you have to lose weight or fat, or you're in a weight class sport, or it might be protein and carbs if you can gain weight or want to gain weight or need to prioritize recovery. So it's not a cut and dry answer, but the fact of the matter is it does help in certain situations. For the average person just trying to look better, feel better, they might not need to load up on protein and carbohydrate during training sessions to maximize strength and hypertrophy. For me, I started competing in track and field a couple years back, sort of like an athletic revival for me, because I used to compete a long time ago. And so now that I'm a master's level competitor, I decided to start competing again. And it's partly a family decision too, because my wife and my children have a blast out at the track, so that I can bring them for training with me. You know, in the past it would be like, go away, daddy's got a weight train now. You know, now I can actually bring them to the track. So for me, I'm actually trying to maintain a fairly low body weight while maximizing my strength and power. So I use just a branched chain amino acid drink during my training, so that I get some of those recovery oriented amino acids without promoting any weight gain. So that's sort of my choice. But again, depending on what you want to do, what your goals are, workout nutrition during, pre, after can be very effective. But if you're screwing up the rest of the day, this is not going to make an impact.
The thing I'd love to wrap up on is, we did get some questions about becoming Precision Nutrition Certified. Can you just give us a little bit of information on where people can check out some information on that, or you know, things that are coming up that people should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for those who don't know about the program, we basically offer a certification program through Precision Nutrition. And there's basically two levels right now. The first level is the sort of theory. And so we wrote about a 600-page textbook, which is used in a couple of different university programs in master's level performance nutrition courses. The first unit of the text is all the science that you would expect from a nutrition certification. So digestion, absorption, special needs, all that type of thing. Then the second unit is what you don't find in any nutrition certifications like this, which is all coaching. So it's a very, very applied section, which talks about things like motivational interviewing and other techniques which you can use with clients to help them actually do what you think they ought to do, and help collaborate in the process rather than just giving them a meal plan or telling them what to do, which is the hugest part of the whole equation. If you've ever thought like, you know, I tell my clients what to do and they just never listen, this is what you need, this second unit. It's all about how to walk people through the changes that are required to listen. Again, it's a textbook. There's online lecture materials. So there's an online lecture that goes along with each chapter, and there's an online test. And once you pass that, you are certified at level one with Precision Nutrition. And this is recognized by most of the personal training organizations. So you can get CEUs and the whole and all that through it. And like I said, I mean, it's become extremely popular with over 6,500, I think, students having gone through it. But beyond that, then we have a level two, which right now we're just using with our own coaches. However, it will be available for level one certified professionals this year. And this is basically a one-year mentorship program online. So it's full out education. Every day there's a lesson or an assignment or a case study to work on. And you get to work with us directly the entire time. So it's a very cool program and process. To be honest, there's really nothing quite like it anywhere else. So for us, this rose out of the demand for people watching what we do with our lean eating and our Scrawny to Brawny coaching program, seeing how many people coach, seeing the types of results we get, and saying, holy crap, how do I do that too? And so we teach you the whole process on how you can do that too through the program itself, through the certification.
Very cool. I know a lot of people that I've talked to, you know, be it at seminars, we have some people on the staff at MBSC that have also gone through the program and have been super impressed and have gotten a ton out of it. So again, if you're kind of in the industry or even if you're like just kind of really into this stuff, you know, definitely give it a look. And, you know, again, like I said, everyone that I've talked to has been super pleased and has gotten a ton out of it. So,
well, thanks, Kevin. Yeah. People don't really have to like go in blindly either. If they come over to precisionnutrition.com, mm-hmm. check out our certification tab. You'll be able to actually browse through sample chapters of the text. You'll be able to look through the table of contents. You'll be able to read articles about the program and stuff like that. We don't want anyone to come in and make an uninformed decision about this. We want people to feel as comfortable as possible before they invest in this program. And so to do that, we want to give them as much as we can in advance. So that's why I think, you know, people know what they're getting into. They make the investment. And honestly, we spent a ridiculous amount of time making this as good as we could possibly make it. And quite frankly, making it better than much of what else is offered in the industry. We're fortunate because we have a mid-sized organization, so we can actually invest in making stuff really awesome. But beyond that, we just really, really deeply care about giving people an incredible program. And the other thing is time. We're on our third version of the text, so we've had a chance to make improvements. Last time we brought on several MDs, PhDs, really well-trained RDs, and naturopathic physicians as well to review the whole text from top to bottom. So we actually got all of these independent people reviewing it and then giving us suggestions for improvement, and that's what we do each time. So the thing just gets, it just is really, really good.
Very cool. It's been on my radar, and I got to just get to, in 2013, one of my goals is to bite the bullet and jump on board. And but like I said, if you guys have any questions about it, the website to check out is precisionnutrition.com. And like John said, go on to the certification page. But unfortunately for today, I am out of time. John, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and it always leaves me with like a page of notes once I'm done talking to you of like stuff that I want to follow up on and like end up going into more depth on. So, man, I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, no worries, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on. It's been great watching you continue to do the FitCast over the years, so I'm always happy to come back. Yeah, man. I'm really appreciative of what you're doing. Certainly of you having me on and everyone who's listened in today for the last hour, taking their time and spending it with us. And hopefully they were able to pull a few things away that they can learn and develop and adapt for themselves or their clients. And if people need more, want more, want to check out more, come see us at precisionnutrition.com, or you can this is the funny part. We just started Facebook this year. Or you can check out our Facebook page.
Nice. Very cool. Again, like John said, thanks everyone for listening. We will catch you next time.
Bye-bye.